What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
TFA fam, what is up? What is happening? We are back again. Another live stream, back with Robbie in the co-pilot chair. Today we're going to be discussing some of our favorite rankings debates. I feel like, because really we've been talking, I feel like we've been agreeing too much on some of these shows we've been doing. There's been too much agreement, and like for us, that's like not usual, right? Like normally we're very different. We're polar opposites in a lot of the ways that we think. So we wanted to have some rankings debates to flip it up a little bit because I'm tired of agreeing, this agreement fest that we've been on, So we're going to do that today. We're going to go through quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end. Just kind of some guys that we are drastically different on in our rankings. And so let's just go ahead and get into it, shall we?
Hey, I'm ready to tell the world why you're wrong with so many rankings, Kev. It's not one. It's not two. You have a whole list here. I don't know what you were thinking. Let's just get right into it.
Well, ding, ding. Let's get after it. So first up on our list, we have Joe Burrow, who I have Joe Burrow at 5. You have him at 9. Walido, rocking with us in the chat. Appreciate you. Did I hear debates? Yes, you did. Yes, you did, Walido. So we're on Joe Burrow. Like I said, I'm at 5. You have him at 9. This is kind of an easy one for me, right? Like, yes, last year he had a solid season with 4,600 passing yards and 34 passing touchdowns. But I think there's still room for growth here. I mean, we're talking about a rookie, Jamar Chase. I mean, this might be the best offense in the league. I mean, quarterback, the offensive line is now greatly improved, with all the additions they've made there. Joe Mixon, but with Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, who a lot of people have as a top 12 quarterback, top 12 wide receiver this year. And then you have still Tyler Boyd is still there. I don't really care about their tight end position, but this offense is just so loaded. And then now you give him an actual offensive line that's going to give him time to throw the football. Like, I think he can improve upon these numbers. He was 8th in passing touchdowns, 6th in passing yards. Like, I think those numbers go up. Maybe I have him at his ceiling because of, he doesn't really possess that rushing upside that I typically look for in a quarterback whenever I'm on the clock. Because he only had 118 rushing yards last year, 2 rushing touchdowns last year, only 40 carries, which is 21st among all quarterbacks. This is not his game. That's not what he's going to do. However, I just think with the improvement of the offensive line, I mean, we're talking about one of the worst offensive lines, an offensive line I think is going to be a top 10 offensive line this year in Cincinnati. And so just that alone, I mean, he was one of the most sacked quarterbacks in the league last year, giving him more time to scan the field, allowing the weapons like Jamar Chase and T. Higgins to get open. That's why I just absolutely love Joe Burrow this year, because I just think kind of the sky's the limit. And I think he can get better than what he was last year.
Yeah, I think the sky's the limit is where I disagree, right? Like you said, maybe I'm ranking him at his ceiling. And I think you're probably right, right about that QB5. Because we have to look at last year. You're absolutely right. Like he had, other than the line, right? He has Ja'Marr Chase, fantastic. He has T. Higgins. He has Tyler Boyd. He has Joe Mixon. He has weapons. And what does he do? He goes out and has 8.7 yards per attempt or 8.9 yards per attempt, which is the ninth most of all time since the year 2000. So he was uber efficient in yards per attempt. He had a 70% completion percentage. So just naturally, you're probably going to have some regression. I get it. Ja'Marr Chase was fantastic. He had 18 and some change yards per catch. T. Higgins is obviously fantastic, 14 or 15 yards per catch. So he's going to be on the higher end of that spectrum, but 8.9 is fantastic. So I expect that to come back a little bit, the completion percentage to come back a little bit, just in natural regressions. But what he can do is, can he improve on the 520 attempts that he has? Because he's going to be efficient, like you're saying, that line's getting better. Can he get more than the 520 attempts? I think those things kind of balance out, the regression and then the attempts. And he probably sticks around where he was last year, and that was QB8, QB10 in points per game. And so where do I have him? Right smack dab in the middle there at QB9. So in my opinion, when you're putting him up at that QB5 range, a top five guy, he has to do something different. He has to have a 8% TD rate, right? He has to throw for 40 touchdowns like Tom Brady. He has to improve the rushing, which I actually think he could probably run a little bit more, you know, a year and a half removed from that ACL injury. But probably that's not his game, like you said. So that's probably not happening. Or he has to, again, be this efficient that he was last year and then throw 570 times, which I don't know if that's going to happen either. So again, I think the ceiling is probably where you have him, but I don't see him getting there. He's probably right smack in the middle of where he was last year.
Well, I think some things you have to take into account is the progression of this team last year from the first half to the second half. Because the first half, like, he was good, not great, and over the first half. But in the second half of the season, I mean, he was elite last year. And some of that had to do with the teams that they were playing. If you look at their schedule this year, their schedule is much harder than it was last year. So, which, you know, a lot of people, when they go and they start looking at schedules, they're looking for, like, are they playing the Jets? And like I want them to play teams like the Chargers and the Chiefs, because that's going to push the score up. That is going to force these teams to have to throw the football. Because, if they get some of these bad teams, I mean, they can go much more run-heavy. I think they go definitely much more pass-heavy than what they were last year. I mean, they were 15th in pass attempts last year. I think they easily get up into the top 10 this year. You don't have this kind of weapons and then to say, well, we're just going to be run-heavy. Like, it's just not going to happen. Like, I think this is easily an offense that's going to be ranked inside the top 10 pass attempts per game. And so, like, I think it's all there. And if you look at him as well, I mean, he was sixth in fantasy points per dropback last year. It's just he didn't have the volume of some of these other quarterbacks to be able to get him up into that elite territory. And so for me, that's just what I love so much about Joe Burrow, is just because everything is there for this entire offense, right? You have all the weapons, improved offensive line, good running back, a running back that can also catch passes out of the backfield. And so, you know, I love Joe Burrow this year. And yes, while he doesn't possess some of the things that I look for in a quarterback, I still think that, you know, I think there's even possible he could go higher than QB5 of where I have him. But, you know, he is right there, right around ceiling range of where I do have him. So anyways, unless you have something else.
No, I think just going at the volume, right? And I have him projected. I just finished all my projections for the 32 teams. 579 attempts is what I have him at. And he comes in at QB10. So unless we're dropping him below a Lamar, a Kyler, a Tom Brady, somebody like that, he's going to finish right around where he was. He has to leapfrog some of these guys. So, and then that's also taking into account the points per game, right? Because a couple of these other guys missed a couple. So I think we're basically on the same point. You're maybe a little bit more towards the ceiling, and I'm right there at the middle. And let's chalk up one win for Robbie. Walido in the chat agrees with Robbie for round one.
I mean, to be fair, you are below consensus on where you have him, because he is currently going right off toward a QB6. And so, you know, I have him just a hair ahead of consensus. You are obviously lower. So anyways, you know, it could be another debate on, you know, who actually won that. But the next two, these two, we're going to clump them together because they're very similar type of options. Second year quarterbacks, both of them possess that Konami type code. And that is Trey Lance and Justin Fields, right? I have Justin Fields at 12. Robbie has him at 20, which is just ridiculous. And then Trey Lance, I have at 14, and Robbie has him at 18. So let's just break this down, okay? One, I will start with Justin Fields, because Trey Lance is super easy. But Justin Fields is So I like the biggest question mark I have for him, and like the thing that we've kind of talked about with him as well, you know, in our Discord, and you know, on here as well with him, is I don't get how people were so high on Jalen Hurts last year, but are not high on Justin Fields this year. Like they are very similar offenses that they're going to be in. We've had this debate before with Justin Fields and that sentiment, because I feel like those offenses last year are so similar. Right? A run heavy offense. The Bears are going to be more run heavy. The Bears have Darnell Mooney and Cole Kmet, where, you know, Jalen Hurts last year had Dallas Goedert and rookie Devonta Smith. And that was really it. There was nothing else past those guys. This is kind of all they had. And so when I look at Justin Fields, who last year certifiably was in one of the worst situations you possibly could have been in. Matt Nagy was the quintessential terrible head coach, utilized them poorly. Everything that they did with Allen Robinson last year and Darnell Mooney last year was all short, intermediate routes. They did not utilize any deep routes. It was completely vanilla offense last year for them. And it was also just musical chairs, right? We're flipping guys in and out. We didn't know on a week-to-week basis who was going to be the starter. But even with that being said, three of the last five games for Justin Fields, he finishes as a top 10 quarterback. He also had 400 rushing yards, you know, in limited time as well. It's not hard to extrapolate to think that he could get to 600-700 rushing yards. And, you know, we talk about it, like rushing yards is such a huge aspect to these guys' games, right? I would take a rushing quarterback all day over a quarterback that doesn't, because they will allow you to have a good floor, because some quarterbacks are going to have a bad game, right? And when you have no ability to run the football, you're dead in the water for that week. But these guys, they, you know, they could have a poor passing week but still get 70, 80 rushing yards, maybe find a rushing touchdown, and it boosts them, right? And not even speaking in leagues that are 4-point per pass or 4-point touchdowns leagues, you get a rushing quarterback that gets, you know, gets that touchdown. That's six. That's an extra couple points, right? That you're not getting from those other options. And so I'm always going to have a running quarterback higher than everybody else. And because it's much, much easier for them to hit this ceiling. Justin Fields, it's not going to take much for him to be able to be a top 12 quarterback. I just don't think that it is. And because I think that with this offense, this scheme that they're going to have this year, it's going to be much more of an outside zone scheme. You're going to see much more getting Justin Fields on the run, you know, utilizing Darnell Mooney as a deep threat, you know, because that's what Justin Fields does the best, is his deep ball accuracy. He's one of the best deep ball quarterbacks in the league. Even last year, that was supported by that last year for him. And so all the things are going to line up. He's just in a much better situation. And so, again, I don't really care if the offensive line is great or not. I really don't care, because of his ability to get out of the pocket, because of his ability to use his legs, it's just going to make it hard for him really, truly to fail this year. And so he doesn't have to go out. I mean, like I said, look at Jalen Hurts. Jalen Hurts went out there and did absolutely dick in the passing game and still was a fantastic fantasy contributor. And that's exactly what I look at Justin Fields. But I think Justin Fields has a much higher ceiling this year in his passing numbers comparatively to Jalen Hurts. So it's easy for me. If you want to wait on a quarterback, I'm going to take Justin Fields, who are nobody's taking him. He's going like 12th, 13th round, somewhere right around there. Give me that all day. If you miss out on, you know, some of the top quarterback options, give me him.
Yeah, I think we'll start with that comparison between Jalen Hurts and Justin Fields, because I think you're misremembering a little bit of Jalen Hurts's stretch at the end of 2020 when he took over for Carson Wentz. He actually had amazing games as a passer. He had a 338-yard game, a 342-yard game, three touchdowns, 44 attempts, one of those games, 39 another game. And his rushing is also different from Justin Fields. Justin Fields and Jalen Hurts, they're both running quarterbacks, but Jalen Hurts is a much better runner, a much more designed rushing quarterback than Justin Fields. We're talking about 18 attempts, 11 attempts, 9, 10, 9, 9, where Justin Fields only cracked, I think, double-digit rushes once in all of his starts last year. And his rushing touchdowns, he only had one rushing touchdown in his, I think he started six games last year. So we're not talking about Justin Fields is going out and scoring rushing touchdowns left, right. You know, we might have three or four. You know, he's probably going to have less than Dak Prescott, right? So I wouldn't we got to pump the brakes on that rushing upside. Like he's going to be a runner, right? But he's not in the Jalen Hurts camp. So that's why I think there's a little bit of difference between that comparison. And then just the overall offense, right? This is not an offense that we're excited for. We're drafting David Montgomery because he can produce whether he has a line or not. We're drafting Darnell Mooney because he's the only show in town. We like Cole Kmet as a little bit of a sleeper, but again, this might be the you're ranking Justin Fields at his ceiling. If he produces, he gets a higher rushing floor than I'm giving him. He steps up his attempts. I think he only had two or three of his starts with 30 passes or above. If he gets more of that volume, they have to throw it a little bit more because they're not in games. Then, yeah, maybe he can get up to that QB 10, 11, 12 area. But I think we're forgetting about the floor as well. He had games where he was the quarterback 30, 31, 32. He was the quarterback 24 in a week, quarterback 18. It wasn't until the end of the season, which I'll give him, right? We improve as we go through in our rookie year. And you're right. I think the biggest point to your case is that his last couple games, he was the quarterback 10. So we did see progression there, it limited in a small sample size. So, again, maybe this is a ranking at ceiling versus I would argue maybe I'm ranking at floor because I do see those down games as well. And an offense that's probably not all that potent. He only had 7 touchdowns in his 6 starts. So I don't think we're going to get a lot of passing touchdown. I don't think we're going to get a ton of rushing touchdowns. He's going to be this middling quarterback 2, probably low in quarterback 2, and that's why I'm ranked accordingly.
So, Alito, one, this is a kind of I was going to trash his take, but I don't want to completely trust it. One, this is a completely new system, right? This is a completely new, Eberflus is there now. Luke Getsy is the offensive coordinator. Like, I don't care what the hell they did last year, right? Any argument of what he did last year, like, or how he was utilized last year is complete trash, right? Because it doesn't matter because everybody that was there is gone, right? So, like, having that argument or that debate or saying that is ridiculous. There's been nothing but positive reports coming out about him this entire offseason. But like I said, I mean, we started to see that progression from him, right? Like I said, week 8, 26.3, week 9, 19.1, week 14, 20.4, and then 16.9 against the Vikings. You know, we're all, top 10 or better, top 10 or better weeks for him, right? And so this offense is going to be better. Like I said, like this offense last year was so unoriginal. There's been so much, like I think we've talked about this, but there's been so many cut-ups of this offense of like just dumb things that Matt Nagy was doing with this offense last year, and it just didn't make any sense. Like they weren't utilizing Justin Fields to his capability, right? We didn't see the play action, the RPOs, the rollouts and everything else that would have made the most sense to get him on the run and allow him utilize his athleticism. He was basically running the Andy Dalton offense last year, which is fucking stupid. Like that's just ridiculous. Like it didn't make any sense. And so that's why I think that a lot of people, are going to look at last year and look at some of the stuff that he did. And that's why people are low on him. Right. And it's, he plays for the Bears. Right. But it's not like people were excited about the Eagles last year. Like, man, I really want to get my hands on all these Eagles pass catchers last year. Right. Like everybody wanted Jalen Hurts because of his ability to run the football. And while I'm not saying that Justin Fields is going to be getting, 10, 12 carries a game, but he's still going to be a guy who finishes top 8 in carries among all quarterbacks. He is still going to be a guy who's going to finish, in my opinion, top 5, top 6 in rushing yards among quarterbacks. And so with that, all that being said, I think there's just like – because we get to this point, especially with rookie quarterbacks, if they don't produce year one, we immediately knock them down. We immediately say, oh, this guy's a bum, toss him to the side is what ends up happening with a lot of these quarterbacks. And I think it's a mistake because we get caught in the Patrick Mahomes, his first year, whenever he started. And, a lot of these other quarterbacks that just came out and balled, but that's just not the way this works. And so I just think everything's aligned for him to take a big step forward this year. And I don't think it's that hot to say that he can be a top 12 quarterback this year.
Yeah. One quick point, and then we'll move on to Trey Lance. I think the only reason I'm not buying back in, because I agree with you, sometimes we throw out the rookie quarterbacks too quickly, and I'm trying not to do that. The problem is everybody said it. Ask any Chicago Bears fan, what did they do to help Justin Fields? They didn't address offensive line. They didn't address wide receiver. They didn't address anything to help Justin Fields. So as we say, he's going to take that step forward. I don't know why we're saying that. I expect this offense, maybe it's different in its concept. I don't expect it to be super great. I don't know how Luke Getsy is going to call plays. He hasn't called plays since he was a college coach. So could he be good? Maybe, but this is a defensive head coach with a first-time offensive play caller that hasn't called plays since college. So maybe he'll be great, but maybe he'll be just one of these guys that we're looking at and saying, hey, this wasn't a good offensive coordinator hire. So that remains to be seen. But let's jump over to Trey Lance because I think there's some similarities, right? We're talking about a rushing floor. What's that ceiling versus And I feel like I'm one of the few that talks about Trey Lance's downside, because I think we did see a lot of it in terms of passing volume and in terms of passing accuracy, aka his efficiency when he threw the football. Is he making completions? Is he getting good yardage out of it? And outside a couple of broken plays to Deebo Samuels, where it was absolutely blown coverage. I think we all remember that one play where he gets, I think it was an 88-yard touchdown that really boosts his stats for that one game, because he had small sample size with only three starts. We're looking at Trey Lance as if he's fantastic. He's going to do it. He's going to be that next big thing. Rushing floor is there. He's going to take the step forward with these good weapons around him. And I just don't think the passing volume is going to be there. I don't think his passing efficiency is going to be there. So he has to be this quarterback that just rushes in for 8 to 10 touchdowns. And he has to be a guy that just throws it a ton just to get to where I think you have him as this low-end QB1. And I'm maybe in the middle. I think he does have a higher rushing floor than Fields, and that's why I bump him up to 18 instead of 20. But I just don't know if I'm buying in on the ceiling like everybody else, where I'm more of the, hey, there's a lot of pitfalls to his games. We're talking about arm fatigue in training camp. Shocking. He only threw 300 passes in college. He's super raw. Like this, there's a reason we have all these question marks why he's not the for sure starter. I don't think we're going to have to worry about Jimmy Garoppolo. I'm not saying that. I think he does move to Seattle or something. They're not going to have a quarterback competition there because they invested too much in him. I'm just not sure he gets it done. And this is a team that doesn't want to mess around. They're in a window where they can win playoff games. And so for some reason, Garoppolo is on that roster. I do think it's a problem, because if he struggles, they want to win games this year.
So I get, Cody, you just out on Trey Lance after 1 year? I mean, last year you were the Trey Lance, you know, worshiper. Now you're out on Trey Lance? You're out on this year already? Listen, I'm going to say this right now, okay? If Jimmy Garoppolo gets moved, the only reason I have Trey Lance at 14 and not higher, if Jimmy Garoppolo gets moved, I'm moving Trey Lance up to the top 10. Like, that's smash. Like, that's easy top 10 guy, right? And very similar to what we talked about. But now we're talking about George Kittle and Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel as being this guy's pass catchers. He's still going to – and he is going to be much more of a guy who's going to be utilized as a runner, like, no doubt about it. Like, he is definitely going to see probably 10-plus carries a game, 10-plus attempts a game. He's built like that. You know, like, it's very similar. So, like, when you're talking about a player like Cam Newton, right? Cam Newton isn't somebody that I would ever have talked about as being, like, this elite passer, right? Just never was. But he was always going to get you there, and he was always a top 12 quarterback because of what? Because of that rushing that he provides. And that's exactly the same thing with Trey Lance. Like, Trey Lance is easy. Like, if Trey Lance is the starter and Jimmy Garoppolo is gone, no doubt about it that he's just an easy top 12, top 10 quarterback because of what he's going to provide. And now you're also talking about him being with just elite weapons that he's going to have. Still a great offensive line. He got to learn for a year. Got to sit. Yes, he got a little bit of opportunity, you know, last year. But he got this entire offseason. Now he's been operating as the QB1 all offseason. He's going to be doing that in training camp as well. So, this is going to be another one of those situations. It's going to be really, really, really hard for Trey Lance to fail. Like, really hard for him to fail.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be on him. And so far, I don't think we've seen a reason to see that he'll be successful running an NFL offense. Now, that can change. I'm not going to be totally out on him. But until I see it, this is a player that I have questions about coming in. So I have to see it to believe it in this case, where other people said, hey, now this is going to be that guy. So you're right. He's going to be a good rusher. And that's going to be the only thing I think that keeps him in that quarterback two conversation, because I don't think the yardage will be there or the attempts. So we look at his three starts last year, QB14, QB20, and then week 17 against Houston, he was the quarterback 10 against the Houston Texans. So, I mean, that's the ceiling for the bad teams. Maybe the quarterback 20 for some of these decent passing defenses is where he's going to be. So I've got him right there in the middle, QB18.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's like I said, it's going to be hard for Trey Lance to fail. So anyways, we don't have to keep harping on that. We talked about both these guys, pretty similar situations or similar feelings on both of them. Let's move over to the running back position, and let's talk about some running backs. I have Breece Hall at 15. You have him at 22. This one's just kind of easy for me. Like, I think that he's going to be the three down workhorse in this offense. This offensive line has gotten better. You know, I love what they've done, you know, through the draft, addressing this offensive line and, you know, just, you know, surrounding Zach Wilson. I think this offense just gets better this year, year two with Zach Wilson. You know, they added Garrett Wilson. You know, you have Elijah Moore. But, you know, I think he is going to be the true three-down workhorse here in this backfield. Yes, I mean, Michael Carter will probably get a little bit of opportunities, but I mean, Michael Carter wasn't, like, heavily utilized as a pass-catching back last year anyway, you know, outside of the games with I can't even think of his fucking name.
Mike White, baby.
Yeah, but outside of that. But he really wasn't utilized as a third-down back either. He was much more of a first- and second-down back. And so Breece Hall, you know, can do it all. And so, like – I don't think it's all that hot having Breece Hall at 15. We talked about it. Like, 9 of the last 10 years, we've had a rookie running back finish as an RB1. 4 of the last 5 years, we've had a top four. Four of the last 5 years, we've had a rookie running back finish in the top five. Like, it's going to happen. Like, one of the, like, and I think he is the clear cut guy who's going to be able to do this. Like, maybe Kenneth Walker is a dark horse that Rashad Penny gets hurt, and you know they just give him so much volume that he's able to find his way into being a top 12 running back. But Breece Hall, like, metrics line up, absolutely love him. I think this offense gets better, good offensive line. You know, I this is another running back that I just feel, you know, pretty confident about, especially with the guys that are kind of going around him.
Yeah, I don't think we're too far off on this one. I think where we differ is how the season starts, right? I think we have a ton of examples of when there is a competent incumbent that the new hot rookie needs to overtake. It doesn't happen week one. It doesn't happen week two, three, four. It normally takes 5 or 6 weeks, maybe after that bye week in the middle of the season, until you fully turn the reins over to that rookie running back. I love Breece Hall. I love the talent. Really pound the table for him in dynasty and rookie drafts. They're not just going to go straight away from Michael Carter. That is for sure the first couple of weeks.
Why?
Because we've seen it. The NFL has done it year in and year out.
This is different. This is Michael Carter, year two of Michael Carter. He's not like Melvin Gordon for Javonte Williams, an established vet, somebody that, like, you know, a coaching staff's going to love. And a coaching staff. Because if they love Michael Carter so much, then why did they trade up to go get Breece Hall?
Because, like, they had Ty Johnson, who's one person on this entire planet.
Yeah, but as much as we know, like, you don't have to take one of these running backs early. Like, he literally is the first running back off the board, and they traded up to get him. Right?
He's a great talent, but we've seen great talents get drafted and they don't get put in right away. Jonathan Taylor, he's considered maybe the best running back in the game right now, right? He was not thrown in. He was behind Nyheim Hines and Jonathan Wilkins. DeAndre Swift, he was behind 35-year-old Adrian Peterson and another nobody running back that I can't even remember anymore from Detroit. Cam Akers, same thing with Daryl Henderson. Antonio Gibson, same thing with Peyton Barber. He was splitting carries with Peyton Barber. NFL teams do it all the time. They don't look at this for fantasy purposes. They don't say, we need to get Breece Hall in because he needs 98% of the workload. No, they're going to split it for the first half of the season. And then this is where I think I agree with you. I do think Breece Hall hits the second half of the season runway that we saw with Jonathan Taylor, that we saw with Javonte, that we saw with DeAndre Swift, Akers. I put them all in the same camp where you can draft him, be excited about him, but be patient with him. It's not going to happen the first 4, 5, 6 weeks. But when he does take over, I think I'm with you. Sky's the limit.
All right. This is probably going to take the longest. How much time? What are we at? 26 minutes?
Let's get it. Wait,
so we have the Zeke Elliott debate. I have him at 20. You have him at 12. His current ADP right now, where is it at? Where does it sit?
I think he's starting to rise. He was at running back 20. I think he's at 18. You and I both predicted as the season gets going.
Yep, he's at RB 18 now. Yep. He's starting to move up. Yes. Which is exactly what I figured was going to happen. And, you know, and some of these other ones, Sleeper, FFC, you know, he's all the way up at 15. The lowest he's at is at 21 on Fantrax, according to Fantasy Pros. He's going to continue to rise, right?
As he should.
And, yep. And so, listen, I want absolutely zero to do with Zeke Elliott. Like, none. Nothing. Like, I don't want any part of him. And since – well, actually, you know, we said that, whoever was higher on could start. Yeah. So I'm going to allow you to have the floor, and then I'll tell you why you're wrong.
Yeah. No, I was waiting. We were switching it up there. So here's the thing. If you disliked Zeke's season last year, right, he was injured. He didn't get a ton of workload. It wasn't fantastic. He only had one RB1 week, I think it was. He was kind of just this middling RB2 that didn't sit out when he probably should have. Like, we'll talk about the injury And guess what? He ends up as the running back 13 in points per game, running back 7 overall, which I know we're not trying to talk about the overall. We want the points per game because that's what really helps you week to week. All of these bad things happened to him, and he still finished as the running back 13. He was a solid RB2. He wasn't what you drafted him for. I think we agree with that. He was in the first round. He didn't pay off at that rate, but he was still a really, really strong running back too. And in really good offense, scored touchdowns, caught passes, right? And this is splitting time with Tony Pollard. That was running back 13. You have him 7 spots worse than last year when he dealt with a PCL injury from week 5 on. So you basically what you're saying is injured Zeke, where he's not getting the workload. He's a shell of himself. We go from 85 yards a game to 49 yards per game. We go from 5.3 yards per carry pre-injury to 3.8 yards per carry post-injury. His yards per reception came down. Everything got worse, right? It was noticeably different. And when you watch the Cowboys games from the stats, no matter how you cut it, you could tell he ran injured, right? Probably should have shut him down, probably should have held him out, but they didn't. And so even through all of that, he's still a high-end running back too. Okay, now we get a healthy Zeke, right? Tony Pollard can still mix in. That's absolutely fine. We get a healthy Zeke who can get better efficiency, who's still on a really good offense, and we have a vacation of targets. The vacation of targets, as Akash would like to say. The vacated targets of Amari Cooper, Cedric Wilson, Michael Gallup for the first 6 weeks. Where do we see those targets go to? They go to the running backs. Like, the stats have shown us that when there's your wide receiver one leaves town, we think the void gets filled with this next wide receiver one, and it does to a certain extent, but a certain percentage drops off to the running back. And so that's going to happen for Tony Pollard, which I agree with your point that you've made on a couple of shows where they're going to both be on the field. And I think this helps Tony Pollard as well, but it's not taken away from Zeke. They shared the ball a lot last year, and they shared it in 2020 when the offense was absolutely horrible. We were going through quarterbacks left, right, and center, going through offensive line left, right, and center. Zeke was still good. He was still a running back too during both those seasons. And now you get him in the third round, running back 18. You can take him, and he has the top 6 running back upside if he gets back to where he was. And if you don't agree with that, that's fine. You still got a fantastic running back 2, low-end running back 1 that you got in the third round. So there's no he's probably one of the best values that you can take right now in fantasy football because people are looking at him and they're saying, oh, you're drafting the injured guy that's going to be even worse than he was last year. And that's not going to happen because he's going to be healthier and he's going to get these vacated targets. So floor is yours, sir.
The problem is that everything you're trying to say is just you're trying to create an excuse for him, right? It was, he was injured last year or the year before. It was something else, right? But the facts remain that Tony Pollard is in the same backfield, right? The same backfield as he is. But Tony Pollard continues to be the more efficient running back. You know, he was this year. He was the year before. And we've continually seen now Ezekiel Elliott continually lose opportunities in this backfield. 2019, 18.8 carries. 2020, he averaged 16.3 carries. And last year, 14.4 carries. Targets, 4.5, 4.7, and 3.8. Targets per game, right?
Do really quick, I hate to interrupt because I know you got a lot of good stuff saying. Can you do the splits weeks 1 through 4, healthy versus not healthy? Because when you say it like that, I agree with you. It's like, oh, man, he just keeps getting worse. But when you put context to that, weeks 1 through 4, he wasn't at 14 carries per game. He was back at his 2019 pace. And so that's just one point that I want to, because I think Ashton also put it. He says he gets worse every single year. Well, yeah, if you just look at the season end, if you don't take context that he played injured, for sure he got worse.
But that's just 1 year, though. You're talking about just last year. I mean, the year before he wasn't great either.
2020, are we going to act like 2020 wasn't a different year? We're playing with 4-string quarterbacks, Garrett Gilbert, Ben DiNucci, and Andy Dalton. Like,
but still, I mean, we're still talking about a 27-year-old running back that has been ridden hard and put back wet, and that has gotten worse and hasn't been the same each of the last 2 seasons. And so, I mean, yes, we can talk about the injury all you want, but again, the part about the injury is it's like a crutch, right? It's being used as a crutch because we have no clue throughout the entire season how much it affected him. How bad was it? How, you know, that's the problem is that like using it is to, in my eyes, is much more of it's like, well, you know, I'm going to use this as an out that he was hurt. We have no clue how bad it was or, you know, did he start to get better? Did he start to improve? We don't know that. And so to me, it's just a crutch, right? Where, and it's even more so of like, who's going around him? Like, who would you rather have? Okay, Cam Akers or Zeke Elliott? It's Cam Akers for me all day because his ceiling is so much higher. Zeke does not have, you have to get out of your head. Zeke does not have top 5 upside. He does not.
He has the receptions. Absolutely. Who gets more receptions? You have Cam Akers, who gets 1.3 receptions per game, and you have Zeke, who gets over 2 receptions per game. That's a no-brainer. Who's the touchdown upside? Tell me Cam Akers' touchdown totals versus Zeke's touchdown totals.
I mean, I want Cam Akers as who I would want. He does. He has a higher ceiling. And by the way, Zeke Elliott was 15th in fantasy points per game last year, not 13th. Just thought I'd put that out there. Okay. And so, but I would rather have Cam Akers. I'm swinging for the fences. I'm not swinging for a single or a double here. I'm damn sure not going to put my third round pick on a 27-year-old running back who's continually gotten worse. And there's nothing there to point to say that that just last year was just a fluke, because the year before, right, wasn't great either.
Honestly, do you take like Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb stats at face value for the 2020 season, or do you say
that's completely different? They're relied on the quarterback. A running back's not reliant on the quarterback position.
Oh, absolutely. You see running games.
We don't see running backs finish. Let's talk about Christian McCaffrey. What great quarterbacks has he had?
What I'm saying is, when you go from
what about starting, Saquon Barkley? Same thing with his 2008, 2019. Same thing.
He was definitely worse when they had their backup in. Absolutely, when they had Mike Glennon in this year. Absolutely, like there's a decrease when you go from your starting running back. It puts more pressure on the run game. I think that's not debatable, right? Would you say that your ability to focus on the running game?
It's gonna be a little bit, but it's not this monster. They're just gonna crater. Like, Zeke Elliott was not good. Like, I remember in 2020, like, there was legitimate debates about, like, should we be dropping Zeke Elliott right now? Like, he just wasn't good. And so the same thing this year is the same thing. Like, he's just continually falling off. And I'm not going to bet on that in the third round, that with my third round pick, that I'm going to take a shot on Zeke. Like, I'm like, oh, well, we'll see if he can do it. He's 27 years old. No
plan. 27. Like, you're acting like he's 30. You're acting like he's David Johnson.
And he's had his workload is by far just not even close to the next guy of the among active running backs. And a guy that's had that much workload over his career, who's damn sure going to be cut after this year, will no longer be a part of the Cowboys because his contract falls off dramatically after this year.
They're not cutting both. They're not losing both Pollard and Zeke. They're going to make a choice on one of them.
The smart move would be to take the guy who's been, you know, the better running back in the back.
You have to make the same mistake, and you have to pay a new running back a second contract at $10+ million a year. If you look at that from a dollars and cents, I don't think they do that. And I'm just speaking from a team strategy standpoint. But we're diving too far into the Cowboys. We can move on to the next guy.
I mean, this is just easy. And then not to mention, just take David Pollard. Just take Tony Pollard. He is the easiest 8th-round, 7th-round pick in all of fantasy football this year. He is so easy. He has standalone value, and he is an absolute to the moon.
How many times did you start Tony Pollard weeks 1 through 4? 0 times. He does not have standalone value. He's it's different.
Listen, small sample size, okay? We're standing on 4 weeks of sample here, and you're that's what you're going down with the ship in. Emmy award winner. We have an Emmy.
I know, and he's agreeing with you. 27 is the new 37. That sounds like a new series.
Didn't know, we have old Dave Berger is a Emmy. Oh, wait, hold on. Oh, three-time Emmy award winner. Love to see it. You know, that's how you know we're going places. You know, we got Emmy award winners. You know, tuning into the show. So
that one was a good one. We got after.
Okay. I was clearly right. You pass on Zeke Elliott, ooh, and you take Tony Pollard 4 rounds later. Thank me later. I wouldn't even be surprised if Tony Pollard, you know, is the starter. He's going to be the best running back in this backfield again.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh man, we got to move on to Antonio Gibson.
Listen, this one's easy. I'm surprised you actually have mid eight. Like, so, like, to me, that listen, this thing with him, and we don't have to spend a lot of time on Antonio Gibson.
Yep.
On one hand, I went back and forth on Antonio Gibson, and like, man, what if Brian Robinson sucks? Like, it's definitely right? The range of possibility. Like, Brian Robinson's just not good at football, right? Like, there were some metrics that you could point to that Alabama, like, he wasn't really that good, like at Alabama, right? And that is one of the best offenses in the league. We know NFL coaches are, you know, especially by that Alabama logo, you know. And so, I don't particularly think Brian Robinson is necessarily that great at football, right? And if he's not, I mean, this could definitely still be Antonio Gibson's backfield, and we're just letting and he's just falling, you know, free falling down the ADP, right? And so, it's tough though because they also have J.D. fucking McKissick that they decided they had to bring back. I was so happy when it looked like he was going to be gone. I think it was with Buffalo.
Swerve.
And then he just changed his mind, decided to go back to, you know, the Washington football team.
Baby, come back.
Yes. Like, I was pissed because, like, you know me. I am the big Antonio. I love Antonio Gibson, the talent, 100%. But it's just a frustrating situation because they've talked about, like, you know, Brian Robinson, Antonio Gibson as, like, what was it, the Jonathan Stewart and D'Angelo Williams. Like, you know. Like, everything that Ron Rivera does is like he is so stuck in the past of the Panthers. Like, everything he talks about is like the Panthers. Everything. Yeah. It was Antonio Gibson. We're gonna utilize him just like Christian McCaffrey. Yep. And then this year it's, oh, we're going to use these two guys like, you know, Jonathan Stewart and D'Angelo Williams. I'm like, bro, let it go of your days of the Panthers, man. You've been gone there for a long time. They fired your ass for a reason, okay? Like, it's just so frustrating. Like, so I very well could be too low on him. I'm at 24. You have him at 18 because I went back and forth on this. But there's just so much uncertainty here that I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to let somebody else take him.
Yeah. Just continuing to mop the floor with you on these rankings debates. And you are too low on him. And I was surprised because I am lower on Gibson probably than consensus for all the same reasons, right? Oh, they bring in another.
His ADP is 16, just so for the record.
Yep. So I'm a little bit lower, right? And they bring in Brian Robinson. They re-sign J.D. McKissick. You're like, oh, no, the sky's falling. They don't like this guy. Well, let's back up a little bit again. He had his shin splints last year and still finished as the running back 10. And we look at the carries, right? We take out McKissick's carries. We take out Antonio Gibson's carries. There's actually 90 carries still there for Brian Robinson to take, and it doesn't cut into one single carry that Gibson has. Hell, do we need to give the ball to McKissick between the tackles? I don't think so, right? And we shouldn't be all that worried about McKissick because Gibson's still fine as a PPR back. He doesn't have that 70 target ceiling that some other running backs have, but he had 52 targets in 16 games last year. He had 44 in 14 games as a rookie. Like, those are fine numbers. They're not great, but that's running back two PPR numbers, right? So he's smack dab in the middle of running back two for me because he does have some risk. They added some other pieces. It makes you uncertain. You're not feeling great about it, but he was fantastic last year, even playing through injury. They upgraded with Carson Wentz. I know I'm not going to shoot through the moon for Carson Wentz, but he's definitely better than Taylor Heineke. So, they bring in Jahan Dotson, right? Another burner, right? So this offense is probably going to take a step forward, and I think Gibson's going to be fine. Give him 215, 220 carries. Give him 7 touchdowns. That's another thing. He scored 10 touchdowns his rookie year, 7 touchdowns last year. He finds the end zone. I understand we can be a little bit worried about Brian Robinson, but I think he's just a fine running back too. I'm not trying to target him anywhere. I actually am down on him this year. But let's not go too far where we're pushing him past into that flex consideration.
So I'm going to say the same thing again. And I will continue to say it. I am all about ceiling. I want players who I feel like are just give me home run hits, right? Every single time throughout the draft. We're trying to win this damn thing, okay? We're not trying to come in third. We're trying to win. And I just don't see the ceiling for Antonio Gibson. And so when I knew my rankings, I tried to intentionally move guys further down because I just don't like if somebody was going off my rankings, I want to make sure that they get no Antonio Gibson, that they have no shot of drafting Antonio Gibson. Unless now, if he did happen to fall to RB24, then yes, at that point, you know, there becomes a point where, okay, the guy falls this far, you're going to take him, right? But for most drafts, you're out on him because where I have him, right? And so that's the way I look at it. I just don't think he really has the ceiling with them bringing in Brian Robinson, with them having J.D. McKissic there. I just think there's too much going against them. Not to mention this offense is going to be probably not great again with them bringing Carson Wentz. Maybe it's a little bit better, perhaps. But, I mean, they do have all the other weapons are certainly there with John Dotson and Terry McLaurin. Logan Thomas is still there. Curtis Samuel is still there. So, you know, it has the makings to be a really good offense. But, you know, unless Carson Wentz reverts to his, you know, possible MVP season, I don't know what to look at here. So that's really my only argument against Antonio Gibson. Like I said, love the player, but I just think it's a shitty situation for him to be in, and I just don't really want any part of him. So
fair enough. Next player.
Let's keep it moving here. Let's go jump over to the wide receivers. Tyreek Hill. This is so easy. I have him at 8. You have him at 12. Okay. I think there's a much more likelihood that we're going to see a very consolidated target share, and it's going to be between two players, Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. And I think Mike Gesicki loses the opportunity. I think he loses targets, and I think it really comes down to Tyreek and Jalen Waddle. I think that you see them utilize a little bit more deep action as well. But Tyreek Hill, we've seen him be a wide receiver one. He's been a wide receiver one pretty much every year of his career. And he's been a wide receiver one without Patrick Mahomes. He's done it with Alex Smith. If you think Tua is at least good as Alex Smith, okay. You know, like he's done it, right? He is one of the best, if not the best, yards after the catch guy. You know, you get the ball in his hands and he can house call it anytime he gets to the field. And I think this offense is going to be able to be a little more explosive than because the Chiefs offense, in all fairness last year, wasn't all that explosive. Like it was much more methodical. Let's dink and dunk down the field, where this year, you know, he's not going to be having those same constraints because people aren't going to play them the same way as they played the Chiefs last year. But Tyreek Hill is still absolutely that guy. He is still going to see 130, 140, maybe 150 targets this year. And the thing is, he doesn't need some massive target share to be a top 12 wide receiver. He doesn't. He doesn't need 170 targets. We've seen him be a wide receiver one on 100 targets because of how explosive he is, because of what the things that he can do with the yard, you know, yards after the catch, you know, obviously deep ball and all that stuff. So Tyreek Hill is just a slam dunk to me. Like, yes, I don't have him as high as I normally would. You know, in a Chiefs offense, he would be top three. But where I have him right now, I just think having him outside of the top 10, I think, is a little disrespectful. I know Cody has him at like wide receiver 15 or something, which is just truly disrespectful, you know, for a player of Tyreek Hill's caliber. And you have him at 12, and you know, that's a little bit more, but still way too low for me, especially with some of the wide receivers that are going in that range. Because like to me, Jalen Waddle going at wide receiver 13 is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, no, I'd say unless you think Tua is going to support top 13 wide receivers, you better be drafting him a hell of a lot higher than ADP shows right now. No, I agree. I think those two wide receivers are going to cannibalize a little bit more than what people think. I agree with you. It's going to be really there. Those two are going to get the main target share. But what does that overall pie look like, right? We're going from a team that threw 40 times a game with the Chiefs, catching passes from the best physical tools quarterback in the NFL, and had Patrick Mahomes had a 6.4 touchdown rate. So you're getting 9 touchdowns to boot. On the flip side, now we go to Tua, and I don't want to slander Tua because I really like Tua, but he's not Patrick Mahomes, right? We're going to have a decrease in that touchdown rate. We're going to have a decrease in those yards per attempt, and we're going to have a decrease in the overall offensive scheme. They're not throwing the second most. They're not throwing 40 times a game in a Mike McDaniels offense. Like it that would be bonkers if they threw it 40 times a game. I assume it's going to be more of the 34, 35, probably league average, right? Maybe even less, just given his history with Kyle Shanahan. I'm not totally buying he's going to run straight what Kyle Shanahan did. I think he understands they brought in Tyreek Hill for a reason. Tua, I think, can take that next step forward. So I'm more right there, league average, right? So if you lower the overall pie, you lower his piece of the pie, he's not getting that same target share he saw in Kansas City. And then you lower his efficiency and his touchdown total. I don't think he gets 9 touchdowns, probably 6 or 7, right? He's going to be a back-end wide receiver one, maybe high-end wide receiver two. That's just the area that those type of wide receivers finish, that get around 83 catches, 1,100 yards, and 6 touchdowns, right? A little bit better than DJ Moore. That's probably where he's going to finish. So I have him right there for projections as well. I ranked this before I did projections, but projections put him right there at wide receiver 12 as well. So, I just don't see that same touchdown ceiling, that same yardage ceiling that we saw with Mahomes. So I don't think we should expect that, right? It's a completely different situation. He does not have the top 8, top 10 ceiling anymore.
I 100% disagree with that. Like I said, like, he has always been somebody that has been independent of that. And, like, honestly, like, if you look at him, you know, I was talking about what he did with Alex Smith. I mean, he had 105 targets that year, 75 receptions.
What year was that, Kev?
2017. But he only had 1,100. Okay. He had 1,183 receiving yards and 7 touchdowns. And he was still wide receiver 7 in fantasy points per game that year, you know, with Alex Smith, and whenever he only had 105 targets. We can agree. Like, he's never been a monster target earner. Like, last year was the most he's ever seen, and that was 159, right? But he's been a wide receiver 1 outside of his rookie year in 2016. That's it. That's the list. Other than that, he's been a wide receiver 1. And like I said, he's done it without Patrick Mahomes. The argument's always been in Patrick Mahomes' offense. Yeah? Well, he's done it without Patrick Mahomes as well. And so I don't see a scenario where he doesn't see 140-plus targets this year. And with that being the case, with how explosive he is once the ball gets in his hand, everything else I laid out, it's going to be really hard. And I think you see far more opportunities of him being kind of Debo Samuel-like with what they did with Debo Samuel in San Francisco, being able to utilize him in that way out of the backfield, getting rushes. Because, you know, all you're trying to really do is get the ball in his hands in any creative way you possibly can because of what he does after the ball is in his hands. And I think you see a lot of that as well. So it's just really hard, you know, that for me to see or even imagine a scenario where he's not a top 10 wide receiver again this year. And so, we'll see how it shakes out. This is one of those situations I'm kind of excited to see and how everything plays out this year with Tyreek Hill. But, you know, again, let's keep it moving. And this is, you know, if I thought that was disrespectful, like, this makes me want to find out where you live and just come over and just punch you in the throat with this disrespect of Darnell Mooney, who I just dropped a video on today. So if people have already watched it, they have some idea of what I'm going to say here. But Darnell Mooney, I have him at wide receiver 14. You have him at wide receiver 26.
Which, just so we're clear, what's ADP? I feel like I have him at ADP, maybe above ADP.
You're
obviously the one completely in left field. I just want to make sure. Don't act like you're going to come over and beat me. You have to beat a lot of people because you are way out in left field.
I am. He's wide receiver 24, 61st overall is where he is currently.
So going. I'm in line with most rankers, just so we're clear.
But they're all wrong. And yeah, and that's pretty much what I said at the start of the video today. Just the disrespect of my man Darnell Mooney here. And I don't really get it because you're getting a wide receiver that was 11th in target share last year, 26.7% last year. 14th in market share of the air yards, 15th in deep targets, 81 receptions, almost 1,100 yards and 5 touchdowns last year. And like we've talked about, there's really nobody else there. But in a different offensive situation, once again, where they are going to be able to utilize this offense much better than what we saw. Because, again, what we saw them utilize with Darnell Mooney, with Allen Robinson, was all short, intermediate route stuff. It was all curls, slants, and Darnell Mooney is much more of a deep threat than, he was 15th in deep targets last year, but he was 56th in catchable target rate last year. 56th in catchable target rate and still posted the numbers that he did, right? And so, like I said, this offense is going to be better. He's going to be more efficient. And you're basically, if you draft him at cost right now, that's where he finished. That's right around where he finished last year. He has gotten better each of the last two seasons he's been in the league. And I very much view him as the Deontay Johnson of last year. Like, I think it's very easy to see a path high-end wide receiver 2, the ultimate ceiling probably being a low-end wide receiver 1. And I don't think it's all that hot. He is somebody that has gotten better each of the last 2 years. He is an excellent separator, top 7 in target separation. He is excellent against man as well, against man and zone coverage. Like, he's just gotten better each of the last 2 years, and there's nobody else there to take targets away from. So you're getting a guy and where he's going, you have him at 26. But a guy who's likely 140, 150 plus targets, you're not going to find many of those guys that are sitting there in that range. And yes, you can say whatever you think about the offense, but the volume is certainly going to be there. So he's going to be able to live off that. And like I said, if we start opening up this offense more, utilize him more as a deep threat, and get a little bit more creative with this offense without Matt Nagy there, then I think that Deontay Johnson, Darnell Mooney takes another big step this year.
So you're excited about the target share, right? You're excited about his volume, right? You think about 140 targets. That'd be fantastic, right? We're excited about that. That's what he had this last year, 140 targets. He was the wide receiver 27, right? Even worse than where I'm ranking him at. So I don't think the volume is going to change a whole lot. He's not getting 160, 170 targets because they're not going to throw it 660 times like the Steelers. So we can't quite go to the Deontay Johnson route because Deontay Johnson almost got 170 targets because they threw it 660 times. Again, this is a Justin Fields offense. They're probably going to throw sub 550, 530 maybe. Have to jump in the projection to see where I have him at, but they're not going to throw that much. So he's the only show in town. I agree. I have him at 140 targets projected, 11th in targets last year, 11th in routes, 13th in air yards, 15th in deep targets. You're talking about all these things. Same quarterback, right? Same quarterback, same bad offensive line. Nobody else around him to take away other options. I don't see why we think there's going to be this big step forward for the Chicago Bears. Was Matt Nagy not great? Absolutely. Is Luke Getsy the next big thing? I don't know that. Like, maybe he's going to be great, but I don't think we take a step forward where Justin Fields is now completing 62% of his passes. His yards per attempt now jumps to 7.5. Like, I don't know if we can make that leap where Darnell Mooney's going to all of a sudden become this wide receiver or high-end wide receiver two is where you have him at. To do that, he'd have to increase the efficiency or increase the touchdowns. And I don't see Justin Fields throwing 25 touchdowns, right? Darnell Mooney's going to be right in that 4 to 6 range. I think I have him projected for 5 to 6. So small increase there, small increase maybe in his catchable targets. But outside of that, like, it's not going to be all that different than what we saw last year in Chicago. Maybe the offensive scheme will be, but I don't think the results, because we have a lot of the same players in that situation. So I cannot have him as a top 15 wide receiver. You're just slightly too high on him. Maybe we talk about ranking ceilings. Here's what we found out, Kev, is that when you love a player and you see that ceiling, you're ranking him at the ceiling. And when you don't see a player with a ceiling, you're pushing him extra down. And that's maybe a difference in how most other people rank, where they're going to say, hey, here's where I expect him to finish, but I do want to cap his ceiling here. If you want to take the upside on this guy in this tier. And here's another point. I just used the word tier. This is why tier-based ranking, I think, is so important, because when you put these guys into tiers, you can have that conversation of, well, I like this guy a little bit more because he's in this tier, but I do think he can shoot up because of the touchdown potential, because of the efficiency potential. That's where we can have those conversations. I don't quite rank Darnell Mooney. And also, I don't really see a ceiling there, right? He's not going to be a high-end touchdown guy. He's not going to be a deep yards per attempt, DK Metcalf, 15 yards per catch guy. He's going to be a middle-of-the-field guy, and he's going to be a low touchdown guy. So I don't see that high ceiling. Hey, Ashton's with you here. That's the quote of the year so far. They're all wrong.
Listen, I know one thing. Generally speaking, when I go all in on players, I'm right. And so
Johnson.
I know. Okay. I'm
Die Johnson, baby.
That was more of a joke than anything. This one's pretty simple for me. And like I said, I mean, it's easy. I've laid out the case. There's a whole 5-minute video on it as well. You can go watch as well on this, so we don't have to keep going down this rabbit hole. But like I said, he's this year's Deontay Johnson, and I don't really think it's all that hot. So let's keep it moving. Let's talk about Terry McLaurin. And I already know the argument against Terry McLaurin is going to be, he's never done it before. We're excited about him every single year, and he just doesn't come through, you know? Like, every year we do this, right? Because, I mean, he finished 29th in fantasy points per game in 2019, 20th in 2020, and 29th again in 2021. is that the argument?
That's one piece of it. That's correct. What do you got?
Yeah, that's the argument. The dude is still a certified baller, all right? He is still an elite wide receiver. Okay, he has happened to be stuck, and that there was no lies detected. Absolutely no lies detected in that statement. The first half of the season for for Jonathan Taylor's rookie year. I mean, Trent Richardson actually was better. I mean, it's actually disrespectful to call him that, to call him Trent Richardson, because Trent Richardson was actually better, you know, that first one. I have no problem with that, because I call it how I see it, okay? I'm not one of those people. And to be fair, I'm pretty confident I'm going to move Jonathan Taylor down. He should not be the RB1. We have this problem every single year of ranking players who finished last year just because where they finished last year. Like, there is a very small chance that he finishes the RB1 this year. And so, anyways, we're going off track here. We're going to talk about Terry McLaurin. I just feel like that whenever we look at some of that Carson Wentz, right? Like, I feel like he is going to absolutely, he is a guy who, one, cannot support multiple wide receivers, right? But I still think Terry McLaurin is somebody who I think is better than, you know, he's kind of been the Allen Robinson type situation, right? Where he's never had a good quarterback. He's always been, you know, we were excited about the Ryan Fitzpatrick situation, you know, but that never came to light. Now, not that Carson Wentz is, you know, a massive upgrade over Taylor Heineke, but he's still a better quarterback than what Taylor Heineke brings to the table. And, you know, especially, you know, if you look at, I mean, he has these boom opportunities, right? Last year, 27.3 week 2, 30.3 week 4, 25.2 week 7. And then, you know, over that second half of the season where, you know, that team completely cratered, you know, is where he kind of had a fallen off. But I do think that he's going to be the number one target getter in this offense. He's the best wide receiver they have. Yes, Jahan Dotson, somebody they spent a first-round pick on last year. You know, Curtis Samuel is still there. But I just think that he is somebody that I think could put it all together with a better quarterback. He's going to see Hunter Brown 130, 140-ish targets, right around where he's been going over the last couple of years. His really big problem has been touchdowns, right? I mean, because 7, 4, and 5, you know, last year he had over 1,000 yards. He's had almost three straight years of 1,000-yard seasons, right? So some of the hate against him, that how bad he's been, you know, I think is a little uncalled for, because he has been, you know, for the most part, since he's been in the league, you know, every single year has been somebody who's dropped over 1,000 receiving yards.
Yeah, I'm surprised you're actually not lower on him, right? We're talking about another lower ceiling player, right? They bring in Jahan Dotson, a first round talent. Curtis Samuel is healthy again. Logan Thomas is coming off season-ending injury from last year, so he's going to be back in the fold. And I get it. He's not the fantastic, but he's better than John Bates. So we're going to have a lower target share for him. He was only at 130 targets last year, which I know I say only, but like if we get all these other pieces, right, that can drop even further. The Commanders were third least amount in passing attempts. So sure, they take a little step forward with Carson Wentz. I do think the efficiency takes a step forward. But we're talking about he's not even the best like prospect of a wide receiver on his team, right? When we had Terry McLaurin drafted in the second round 3 years ago, we were like, man, he was overdrafted, right? Like this was way too high for him. Jahan Dotson, first round talent, much better pedigree. Like, it would be a surprising
talent. I feel like most people think that they reached on Jahan Dotson.
End of the first round, he definitely went a little bit higher than people thought, but most people had him around that end of the first round. First round, going to the Packers, going to the Chiefs, were a lot of takes there. But he's probably the better prospect, and so if you tell me that Dotson's going to be the better wide receiver in 2 years, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, give him his rookie year to get his feet wet, and then he's a better wide receiver than McLaurin. I wouldn't be surprised. We've seen Terry McLaurin be a really good flex, low end wide receiver too. And for some reason, we're taking him as this really solid wide receiver too. We're ranking him as a really solid wide receiver too. When his situation got worse than last year, he was wide receiver 29, 2 out of 3 years, and his situation got worse. So I don't know why we're thinking he's going to be a locked in wide receiver too.
I mean, maybe it got worse, right? Like, I mean, you're counting a whole lot of like Curtis Samuel to be actually
able to stay. Who was their second leading target getter?
Yeah, no, but like, okay, but let's
no idea.
Heading into last year, right? I mean, the situation is not all that dramatically different outside of you went from you added Carson Wentz. I don't know what Jahan Dotson's going to be. I really
he's probably going to get 85, 90 targets, right? And that's more than their second leading wide receiver got. You add in Curtis Samuel, right? He's going to be the best wide receiver three that they've had in the last couple of years, right? There's going to be a deflux in target share just because the talent around them is better. You're not playing guys like Cam Sims and Antonio Gandy-Golden, right? And like some of these guys that just have no business starting NFL games. So sorry to all those dynasty shares that were missed on AGG, but there's going to be a decrease in target share, and he's not a high touchdown guy. So there's just really no reason to get super excited about him as a wide receiver two, because he's never really been a safe wide receiver two. He's always been a flex guy. And in my opinion, the target share is going to be worse, and there's no touchdown ceiling to bank on. So I'm out on McLaurin. I have him lower than rankings. I have him much lower than you. I have him lower than ADP just because there's no reason to take him at cost right now.
You just hate good players.
Another one that I'm right on. Look at this. Look at this in the chat. Kev, I don't know if you won one yet. I think they were split on Zeke, but other than that, you're just getting the floor.
See, here's the thing, though. See, I don't care about winning through the court of public opinion. I only care about winning at the end of the year.
That's fair.
I could be wrong all day, but, you know, then when we're, you know, we're just winning people's championship. Zenon, what's up, my man? What is up? I know. Training camp starts, like, I think the Jaguars report next weekend, right?
Next weekend.
Yeah. And so, I mean, we're here. We are here. Football season is upon us. The first preseason game is what, 3 weeks away? Something like that? 3.5 weeks away?
Yeah, we're right there.
I am excited, thankfully. I am tired of the offseason fodder, the offseason discussion. So, anyways, let's
do one or two tight ends. You pick which tight end you want to talk about. Let's get one tight end in here, and not Njoku. We don't need to talk about it. That's a Deshaun Watson. Is he playing or not? That one's easy to do. Pick between one of the other two.
Let's do. Oh, we can't do David Njoku.
No.
Dan Arnold. Yes. That's the one we should have done. We should have done Dan Arnold. Okay.
We already have a bet. So we haven't made a bet on this show yet. I think when we do our nuts on the table, which I think we need to workshop that name for our hot takes, just to be more inclusive to our lady listeners as well. But when we do that, I think you and I will get some more bets on the table. Kevin and I, and Cody's going to get in on it too. We're going to have a board that's recording all the bets that we have. I think Walido, you had tracked a couple of them, but we're going to get some bets on the table to make sure, like you're saying, you care about what happens at the end of the year. That's when you want to be right. So I think we need to have one here.
This one's like so easy for me though, with the Dan Arnold stuff. Like, it's so easy, but we're not talking about
just so everyone knows, it's Evan Engram versus Dan Arnold, who finishes higher, right? Simple as that.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, it's super easy, and it's going to be Dan Arnold. So let's talk about Patty Fry. I guess let's talk about some Patty Fry.
All right, let's do it.
I feel like the argument against him is going to be that, well, they added George Pickens, and they're not going to throw the ball as much as they did last year. And, you know, all that jazz. Would that be fair? Would that be a fair?
Make your own argument. You can't do this.
Well, I'm actually, your argument is. I have to start every single one of them. You're high. Oh, wait, I'm higher on than you.
I'll start. Okay.
Yeah.
We're going from a team that threw 664 times with a 38-year-old quarterback where he was just getting the ball out, throwing a short West Coast dink and dunk offense, right? That's obviously going to change. Whether it's Mitchell Trubisky, whether it's the rookie and Kenny Pickett, they're not throwing at that volume, right? And that's going to hurt all the pass catchers. I'm not even including adding George Pickens in there, but if you want to, you can. Because honestly, you can make an argument when you do the projections, Pat Freiermuth might be fifth in targets. When you look at that for tight ends, they should be going nowhere near your top 12. They're going to be fifth in their team in targets. So we got to drop that down to maybe low 600s, maybe high 500s. They're not going to be this team that throws at that volume, right? So 79 targets that he got last year, that's going to come down. I project him to have about a 12% target share. So I've got him right around that 60, 65. And the problem is he doesn't get the touchdown rate that I think he got last year. He got one touchdown for every 8 catches last year, which we know tight ends, they're obviously a little bit higher than wide receivers just due to their red zone usage. But one for every 8 is like Adam Thielen with Kirk Cousins numbers. It's like crazy hard to repeat, especially with that low volume that he's probably going to have. So he's a tight end too. And if you're talking about other tight ends that we want to take, I'll be taking a lot of other guys. Irv Smith is another one on this list. Cole Kmet we talked about on a previous show. Gerald Everett was the guy we threw out during our mock draft. Like, there's a ton of other guys that are going to be in better offenses that have higher touchdown potentials and probably a higher target share than being fifth on their team in targets. And I'm going to be much more excited about than Pat Freiermuth. Loved what he did as a rookie. I think he's going to be fine, but there's just too many questions where he's just going to be this. I go off, you know, once every 4 weeks and end up as a tight end 14.
First of all, let's remember that it doesn't take a whole lot to be a top 10, especially, you know, a top 10 fantasy tight end, okay?
Correct.
But there is definitely room for improvement here. I mean, he was 16th in targets last year. He was 20th in routes run. And this is a rookie tight end. We're not talking about someone who's been in the league 4 or 5 years. We're talking about a rookie tight end. So, for one, it's kind of impressive what he was able to do anyways as a rookie tight end, because it just takes them so much longer to produce. But this is, like I said, 16th in targets, 20th in routes run, 25th in route participation last year. The only thing that he really led in was red zone targets, which he was number one in, 20 red zone targets, right? But, you know, he was still pretty solid in the efficiency metrics, 12th in yards after the catch, 19th in yards per route run. So, I mean, so there is some things to look at there with him. But, one, I don't even know if Chase Claypool is even actually good at football. I don't know, because he was fucking terrible last year. Like, he got benched at multiple different times last year, Chase Claypool did, right? And then you have George Pickens, who, again, somebody that I absolutely love coming in, but I have no idea what to expect from year one. You know, so to me, it's Deontay and it's Najee Harris, right? But to say that Patty Fry can't see 85, 90 targets this year, I think it's kind of ridiculous. I think that's definitely in the range of possibilities for him to see an increase in targets from this year to last. I just don't think it is. And you're expecting, I think, that we're going to see just this massive drop-off in play volume. I don't think that we are. One, I don't think this defense is still going to be any good. I mean, that was kind of one of their problems last year. They were constantly trailing in games. They had to throw the ball. And I don't think that's really going to change all that much this year. And so I think they're going to have to – I mean, I'm not expecting them to be as high as they were last year. But to say that he can't get 85, 90 targets, I think is kind of silly, because I definitely think that is in the range of possibilities for him. And, you know, he's going to be their number one red zone target likely again. You know, that's not really something that we look at Deontay Johnson and being like this elite red zone guy. You know, yes, they have Chase Claypool, but, you know, who else are the options outside of Najee Harris, right? And so it makes sense to get your 6'5", 250-pound option, you know, inside the red zone develops up for him. So he's going to see his fair share of red zone targets as well. And so, you know, I just think that Patty Fry just kind of makes some sense. I mean, he's not somebody that I'm, like, overly excited about. Like, man, I have to get Patty Fry. But, you know, having him at 10, I don't think is all that egregious. Having him at 16, though, that's something.
Right, where he's going to be at, yeah. Just to finish up, I think it really depends on where he comes out in the pecking order. You think maybe that pie is a little bit bigger and he's maybe doing a little bit better than Pickens or Claypool. The problem is when you look at guys who get 90 targets or more at the tight end position, they're either number one in the target pecking order, like a Kelsey or Andrews, or they're a number two, right? Like a Gesicki, Pitts, Kittle. Well, I guess Kittle's one when he's out there, right? But they're one or two on their team, and that's how you become this top eight. And I agree, when you get after eight, it can get any which way, and you're probably just looking at who scored the most touchdowns. If you score 7 touchdowns, like Dawson Knox, like Patty Fry, you're going to jump into the top 10. So if he gets that touchdown total again, which I don't think he gets, if he gets more volume than I think with the 65-70, there's that chance. I don't see that in the volume, and I don't see him getting more than Chase Claypool, who's had 100 targets, 107 targets each of his first two seasons. Like, I don't see him equaling that. But a good one to end on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, once you start to get into a certain point of the tight end position, like, you start getting a little gross, right, of options and kind of easily projectable of guys. You know, I have, like, David Njoku, who I'm probably more excited about than Patty Fry. But, you know, either way. So, you know, I think we need to do a lot more. We need to do some throwdowns for sure. Come up with some throwdowns to do. So, I can really dig in and prepare.
This gets you the itch. Did you enjoy this? Now we're not on the same side.
I did. You know, I've been, you know, carrying the load of all these profiles. So it's been good to get on somebody else on here to have conversations about. And really, I just want to argue, because that's what I love to do about this anyways. And I don't like just agreeing with people all the time, you know?
Sure. That's what we do here. We want to make sure that everybody listening gets the full 360 of these players. Hey, why do we like them? Why do we not like them? Let you guys decide. Thank you for everybody who weighed in. We had a ton of activity in the chat. Continue to check in on videos, because we have them coming each and every week.
Oh, for sure. So they're each and every day they're going to be coming out with these profiles. We're going to mix in some other stuff as well. We're going to fire up probably the Mock Draft Monday stuff, get that some of that going, and then we're going to get throwdowns going as well, because I absolutely love doing those. So I appreciate everybody checking out the video. Be sure to hit that like and subscribe button if you are new here. We hope to catch you. We'll be back again next week. We have not figured out what that topic is going to be, but we'll definitely be back again next week for another live show. Enjoy your weekend. We'll catch you on the next one. Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.